Hello, men. Welcome to this episode of the Dads Making a Difference podcast. Today's episode is going to impact you. And I say that because it impacted me deeply. Today, I'm having a conversation with Xane Anderson. Xane is a father. He is a husband, and he is on a mission. He's on a mission to help as many fathers, mothers, families, and marriages as he can. You see, Xane has an incredible story. A story with highs, a story with lows. But Xane shares that story today with us. He opens up and shares about the loss as an 8-year-old boy, the loss of his mother, and how that impacted his life and what he learned through that. And then how his father, who was now a single dad of 7, continued to press on. And what X learned from his father in that time. You're also going to hear of X's highs and lows, literal highs, climbing mountains with his daughters, and lows of losing his little girl, a loss that none of us fathers wish happened to anyone. I want you to listen to this entire episode because at the end of this episode, X is going to talk briefly about his book, What I Want My Children to Know Before I Die. And you need to listen to his story. You need to listen to his perspective before you get to that so you know the point. Because he wants you to live a life of impact, a life of influence, to understand that the little things matter. And he wants you to be present. He wants you to become a dad, making a difference. This episode with Xane Anderson starts right now. You are listening to the Dads Making a Difference podcast, the number one podcast for men driven to live a life of significance. Men who want to make a difference in the lives of their families, in their business, and in the world around them. My name is Cam Hall, founder of Fight the Dadbot and leader of the Dads Making a Difference Mastermind. Thank you so much for spending time with me today. Now, let's dive in. XM, welcome to the Dads Making a Difference podcast. Brother, it's good to see you today.
Thanks, Cam. Thanks for having me on today.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I'm excited for this conversation. I know this is one that we've been trying to put together for some time and, you know, reached out and then you're like, hey, doesn't like next week work? And I said, man, this is great. I'm jacked up. I'm jacked up to hear about your story and for you to share your story with our listeners. It's a powerful story. It's one that's going to be, I think it's going to make a huge impact on the guys who listen to this and the wives who are listening to this, who pass these episodes on the slide to their husbands. But you do have such a fascinating background and story that has shaped you to be an impactful father, but also in your professional life as a mentor and as a coach and what that has meant to you and your development. And I want to tie it all in together, but I think the best way to start Xane is what, which by the way, really cool name, I have to say. You probably get
thanks,
that a
Cam.
Lot. Yeah, you get that a lot. But to share a little bit about what was it like for you growing up? Because I'm always fascinated when guys get to this stage in their life, you know, mid 40s. I'm not aging you, I'm just thinking about where I'm at.
Right on.
Okay, good. Yeah. Like, and we start to look back at like, why am I the guy that I am right now? And a lot of it can point back to how it was for us growing up. So why don't you start there? What was it like for Xane Anderson growing up?
Thanks, Cam. You know, I had a childhood that was I kind of divided into two parts. I had a great mom, great dad, lots of siblings. And let me tell you a little bit of a story. You know, when I was young, I used to like to draw trees, and I would draw them with every leaf, every branch, every vein in the leaf. And I went to school later and I saw how the other children drew trees, and you can imagine they drew them kind of with two lines and a little poofy cloud on top.
Right.
But when I saw how the other kids drew trees, I stopped drawing them the way I used to, and I started drawing them the way the other children did. And my mom, when she saw this, she cried a little bit. I found out later. And you can imagine why, you know, kind of changing who I was to be like the other kids. But fast forward a little bit, I was at a Little League game. And I got to tell you, Cam, I was horrible at Little League. There's a few different ways to play baseball, and one of them is to hit the ball. If you were pathetic like I was, I'd just hold the bat out and you'd hit the ball would drop and hit a bunt. It was called a bunt, you know. Yeah. I had one bunt the entire season as an 8-year-old boy. But I'm not here to tell you how pathetic I was. We went home from this game, and there was something significant that happened. My mom, she complained of a very severe headache, and it was not normal for her to get headaches. And my dad eventually became quite concerned and said, "We're going to take mom to the hospital." And I remember standing there in the front room of our home and gave my mom a hug and told her that I loved her, and they drove away. Well, as an 8-year-old boy, I wasn't, this wasn't, typical for my mom to go to the hospital. And my uncle just happened to be visiting us at the time, and my aunt. And I went to my uncle and I said, Is my mom going to die? And he said, "She's not going to die." And I said, "Do you promise she's not going to die?" He said, "I promise. Just relax. You're going to be okay." And I wanted to believe him. And I went downstairs and climbed up on my bunk bed and tried to wait up for my parents. I was reading a book. I still remember the book. It was a book about squirrels, and I read and waited up for my parents, and they didn't get home. It was probably 2 or 3 in the morning before I finally fell asleep, waiting up for them. Anyway, the next morning I woke up, and I was a little bit anxious because I wanted to see my parents. I climbed off my bunk bed, climbed down, and it's kind of this. I opened the door to my room. There's kind of this long family room outside of my room, and as I looked into this family room, I could see my dad, but something was different. My mom was not there. Instead, there was a neighbor and a friend and another neighbor and another friend and another neighbor. It seemed like half the neighborhood was at our house. And as I walked towards my dad, I could see that he had been crying. He had tears on his cheeks. And as I got even closer, he kind of gathered the children around. And I had, just so you know, there were 7 of us. I was the second oldest. But my dad, he said through his tears, he was trying not to cry and he was not doing a very good job. Through his tears, he said, "I think our mom is going to leave us." And by the way, he was crying and he was so emotional. I kind of put two and two together. I said, "Dad, Dad, we got to do something. We got to do something. What can we do? We got to do something. We got to help. We got to help mom." And what had happened, Cam, is my mom had suffered a cerebral hemorrhage, which means a blood vessel in her brain had burst. And she was now brain dead at the hospital, being kept alive by a life support system. A couple days later, I remember being in the hospital. I could see my mom. She had tubes coming out of her nose. She couldn't breathe on her own, so she chest kind of rose and fell with the help of this machine. And Cam, eventually it came time for them to take my mom off of this life support system. And when they did, she kind of crinkled up and turned bluish as the life left her body. Now, as an 8-year-old boy, I was really scared and I wanted to give her a kiss, but I kind of didn't dare. And so I went and faked one a couple inches from her face and I walked down. I got to tell you, my mom died that day. As an 8-year-old boy, I watched my mom die. Just to give you a little more information, after I left the room, there was an anesthesiologist who happened to be a friend of our family's who was in the room. He told us later that my mom, after I had left, she went from being kind of crinkled up to where she kind of spread out her arms on her own, almost like she was coming into a beautiful place. But here's my question for you, Cam. Like, how do you think I draw trees now?
Yeah, I bet you draw them like your mom wanted you to draw them.
That's exactly right. I
Yeah.
mean, even on this podcast with you, I'm sharing my heart figuratively right now. I'm drawing trees the way I see them. Figuratively with you, I'm sharing my heart with you. I got to tell you, I haven't given my mom a hug for over, I got it's close to 37 years now since she left. But there's something that's almost as good as giving your mom a hug, and it's feeling her influence. Even though now you called it right on, I'm in my mid-40s, haven't given my mom a hug since I was 8. But her influence is still with me. And so I would want parents who are listening to hear to know, those little things you do have more power than you can imagine. You got to realize the little things you do are really everything. And your kids will remember them. I can tell you, I do. So You asked me about my childhood. I had a great childhood. After my mom died, that was things kind of changed, and we could go into depth there. But I do. The main point is that parents have a huge effect. And for those parents who are wondering, I can tell you that you have more influence than you think.
I
Thanks for
appreciate
asking the great question.
No, I appreciate you sharing. Man, there's a quote that I love. It says, "A mom's hug lasts long after she's gone." And
Oh, yeah.
yeah, I appreciate you sharing that story about your mom.
Thanks for letting me share.
You said there were seven of you. Seven.
Yeah.
And you're eight. How old were your other siblings around that time?
My sister was 10, almost 11, and my youngest brother was 7 weeks old. He was still breastfeeding, actually. And so there was my dad stuck as a widower in his mid-30s, seven kids. Yeah, I mean, life was more, for me, it was more challenging after that. And probably for everybody, I'm sure, in my family.
Yeah, I just think about your dad in that spot. Can you speak to your dad? Your mom played such an impactful part in your development. That's clear. But what did you learn by watching maybe your father go through that short period of time after your mom passed, to you becoming, you were eight? Like, what was it like when you were 15? What was it like when you were 20? Like, what did your relationship with your dad look like after that?
These are good questions, and truthfully, it was not always easy. But let me tell you what I did learn from my dad. My dad was still strong. He still stayed firm to what he believed. He's a good man. I'll tell you right now, my dad has stage 4 cancer, and he's lived a great life. He's been a great example to being consistent and strong and good in what he believes and values. So I want to honor my dad. He's had more influence than people realize. And so, one of the things that I can say about dads and this, and my dad as well, is he did consistent things every day. Every day, he tried to teach the things that he felt was were really important. And he'd do that day in and day out. And so, I can't tell you how many people, my dad now, I believe he's got close to 54, maybe 55 grandchildren right now.
Wow.
And
Yeah.
so his staying strong and being faithful and good and doing things he felt to do have influenced more lives than just us seven. And he's got grandkids, and it may not be too far off before he has great grandkids. We'll see.
Yeah, amazing. The consistency from your dad, your mom's influence to just be you, to not conform. I think about that drawing trees and how easy it is for us just to just follow what everybody else does. And it's hard to step out sometimes and do what we think is a little bit risky for us, something that might be uncomfortable. One of the most uncomfortable but exciting things that happens to us men is when we get married, but then we become a dad ourselves and we realize that
Right.
we are responsible for another human being.
That's right.
You have five kids, right? How
That's
old are
right.
they? What's the age range?
It goes from 19 down to 6.
Amazing. That is wow. 19 to 6. You're at every stage at once.
That's probably true. That's
Yeah.
probably true. Yeah, and the thing is it is become such an opportunity, it you can feel the weight. I'm not going to lie. Obviously, as a dad, we can feel the weight of being an example of having of providing of being, we're responsible for this life, and that is some weight. But there's also some just wonderful, great times that we can have with our kids, and you get to have both, right?
Right. So now that you're a dad and you've been a dad for 19 years, you've known that you're going to be dad for almost 20, so what have you learned about yourself over the last 19 years that you look back and like, I'm always growing, I'm always doing something new, but here is a writing theme that I learned is what it's important to me. Here is what I stand for. What have you learned about yourself through this journey?
Well, that's a super good question, Cam. And let me tell you one of the things that happened that made me realize that I can learn so much from my kids. It made me realize that I can learn from them and still be a good dad figure, I hope. My my 5-year-old daughter one time came to me and she said, "Hey, Dad, I want to hike this mountain." And this mountain near where we live, it's about 11,700 feet. It's a mountain
It's a
that
mountain.
people fly in from all over to hike. And I'd hike it sometimes. And she said, "Dad, I want to hike this mountain with you." And she's 5 years old. And I said, you know, and maybe my first gut could have been like, "Well, you can't do that because you're too young." But I did ask. I just asked her, said, well, tell me about this. You want to hike it?" And she said, "I do." I said, "Well, you know, it's going to take all day if we hike it. You got to hike from morning all the way till evening. And it's about a 15-mile round trip hike. And you got to go up thousands of feet." She goes, "I can do it, Dad." I said, "Well, what's going to happen? If I let you go, what's going to happen?" She said, "Well, I'll just keep going." I said, "Well, what happens if your feet hurt? Because they're probably going to hurt."
Yeah.
She said, "Well, I'll take a rest and I'll keep going." I got to tell you, she was persistent enough and enthusiastic enough. I said, "Well, let's give it a shot." So we got on this mountain, and here's my little 5-year-old daughter. She hiked all the way to the top. I got to tell you, like, she did it, right?
Yeah.
And it was a great experience. And she's actually, I think it made her confident. Now, I could have, if I was in a different frame, I might have said, "Well, you're too young. You can't go. We'll do it later," and just pushed it off. But the thing is, I think sometimes our kids have more abilities than we allow them to think. I got to tell you, when she got to the top, she had people giving her high fives and saying, "What a trooper." And in fact, she even got a standing ovation by some of the people who kind of stood up and clapped for her, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, as dads, if we could be, and by the way, there's been many times where I failed and I haven't done it like this, but this was one time where I got it right, I think, even though I could tell you probably a dozen other times where I got it wrong. But if we could say, "Hey, you know what? We can have adventures with our kids and kind of let them lead the way." And I've realized that my kids have so much potential. If I can kind of get out of their way and help them along the way, that I can help them. And it becomes fun. I mean, it was really fun to hike with her. And she, I think it's made her confident and among other things. It's just been good to see.
Yeah. And how old is she now?
Gosh, she is now 10.
Okay.
Yeah. But she's kind of a confident girl. And I think that experience probably added to it.
Yeah. Amazing. You're doing good work, man.
Well, not always. I could tell you a bunch of failures. And I want you to know, for any dads out there, I want you to know, just keep going. We've all blown it. We've all made mistakes. I'm right up there. But I'm saying, yeah, thank you.
Yeah. And I say that not to say that you're a perfectionist, you've got it all figured out. But I say that as a dad myself, who I think good work, when I say that to you, I just want to let you know that I see a man driven to make the most for his family, a man who's gone through highs, who's gone through lows, who's going to show up every day and follow his dad's example of being consistent and bringing the right thing every day. And it doesn't mean
I
that
hope
it's
so.
Right.
I haven't always done it, but I hope to be like my dad more. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not always right. It's not always perfect, but it is something, right? And it's that 1% we take every day. And that's the work that you do. And it sounds like you're doing a great job, but you don't do it alone. How long have you been married to your wife for?
Well, my wife, interesting story. My wife and I have been married now almost 14 years. Mm. So one of my children is from a prior situation. She's a wonderful wife. She's a wonderful mom. Yeah, I'm lucky to have her.
Can we talk about your other daughter? Can we talk about the experience in your life that probably transformed you as a dad? Even, you know, the mountain experience is really important. But
sure, you mean my older daughter?
Your daughter Cheyenne.
Yeah, let me tell you this. My daughter Cheyenne was a beautiful angel baby. She had soft, dark hair. She had deep brown eyes. And just so you know, and I should have said this from before, so I have, I actually have 6 kids, and I did not include Cheyenne in that, and I should have, because she's a, 5 that are living. So when you asked me, I told you how many I had living. But I'm going to tell you the story about Cheyenne. Cheyenne was a beautiful angel baby. She had soft, dark hair, deep brown eyes. She was very, very calm. And she was so calm, in fact, sometimes she would just look up at me as a baby and just kind of gaze into my eyes. I'd have to stop what I was doing and gaze back and just kind of lock eyes with her. And there was just this feeling of calmness. Well, I got a fast forward. I was sitting on the side of the road. I got a phone call from a stranger, a number that I didn't recognize, and I answered the phone, and And the other end of the voice said, is this XA Anderson? And I said, it is, or something like that. And they said, your daughter has drowned. You need to come to the hospital. And I said, what? And they said, your daughter has drowned. You need to come to the hospital. I got to tell you, Cam, I don't remember exactly how that conversation ended. Somehow I found my way to the hospital. Somehow I parked. Somehow I found my way into the room. And I saw my daughter Cheyenne there. And she had tubes coming out of her nose. By the way, that wasn't the first time I'd seen someone I loved with tubes coming out of their nose. I walked into that room and heard someone in the background say the words brain dead. And that wasn't the first time I'd heard those words. And there were a lot of people in that room who were probably not calm. But as I walked up to my daughter, I just kind of put my hand on her arm right here. And when I did that, Cam, I got to tell you, I felt calm. I knew things were really bad. I knew what brain dead meant. But somehow when I stirred her, I felt calm, almost kind of like she was looking up at me calm. And I went over to one of the EMTs and I said, I'm a big boy. I want to know what's going to happen to my daughter. And they said, she's probably going to make a really good donor. Anyway, eventually they had to wheel my daughter out to an airplane. They were going to take, they needed to fly a couple hundred miles to a specialized hospital. I sat there on the airplane and I could see them respirating my daughter with a bulb. They had this little bulb that they'd used to keep her ventilated. And there was a moment there, Cam, on that plane where I could just feel a little bit of darkness coming in. And I just prayed. I said, help me not to be bitter. And I haven't been. Plane landed, drove up to a hospital. Doctors, they hooked her up to a bunch more other machines. A lot of things happened, but eventually the doctors came in and said, it's not looking good. And for the second time in my life, I got to see someone I love taken off of life support system, off the life support system. And I just held my daughter in my arms until she was gone. I got to tell you, with one these experiences I've shared with you, Cam, there's one thing that I think I've learned and hopefully have learned is that life is shorter than you think. And this opportunity we have to be with our children, it goes fast. Sometimes we're busy. We've got work to do. We've got pressures. We've got deadlines. We've got pressures at work or financial pressures, or we have pressures in relationships or things. But there will be a time for most dads when their kids will ask them to play maybe for the last time. And I think it's a good thing for us to be able to say, you know what? I'm going to put the phone down. I'm going to put the tablet down. I'm going to put the laptop down. I'm going to just be here with my kids and focus on them, because these times are so precious. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm guilty as anybody of being distracted or being on my phone too much or being on a computer when I should have been keyed in. But I got to tell you, if you can put it down and say, you know what? I'm going to focus and be here and be present.
Yeah.
I know from my mom, there were things, little tiny things that she said or did or expressions that will stay with me till I die.
Yeah.
And so those moments that you think maybe don't matter, they might flow down for centuries. Whereas that stupid thing on your phone that you're scrolling through doesn't really matter. Put it down and be there with your kids, you know?
Yeah. I've had that realization most recently because my oldest just turned 12 a week ago. As I tuck her in, I say that in quotations, I don't tuck her in anymore, but we hang out before she goes to bed at night. I lay on her bed, we read together. I hear about her day, we get to have a connection, and then I look at her and I'm like, my little girl is now a big kid, and I've got 7 more summers with her. You know, like, and I kind of look at it that way. And my wife's like, well, that's a terrible thing. I said, no, I just, it's not a doom and gloom seven more. It's like, I am so excited about the upcoming years that we have through this really cool period of her life and how I get to step into a different role as a dad with her than I do with my son. You know, it's really cool, but to make those moments matter. It's easy for me to sit in this office, which used to be the nursery, and get sucked into a device or to my work or to a book or something. And she'll come in and she'll just kind of wander in. What are you doing? Good. She's like, and walks out, which I know that that's her polite way of she wanted to ask me to do something, but she doesn't want to interrupt. So I'll close things. I'll come, hey, what do you want to do? She's like, oh. And then she's kind of surprised. So thank you so
Awesome.
much, Xane, for just the reminder and the reinforcement that we need to live in the moment. We need to be there for our kids. And as your parents did for you, and as you are doing for your kids, start to plan on how do I make these moments count? And what do I want my kids to know? And so I want to take that into a project that you have, your new book. Your book is called What I Want My Children to Know Before I Die. Tell me about the book.
Well, I got to tell you know, the thing that inspired me is my mom died when she was 32, right?
Yeah.
And she did keep a journal, and you know, I've read probably a good portion of those journals, and I'm grateful for them. At the same time, you know, I almost sometimes wish I had more of her thinking and how she thought. And I don't think she had time raising seven kids to write a book, you know. But I thought, you know, we don't know when we're going to die. We don't know if it's going to be today or tomorrow or in 5 years, or I mean, any one of us, you know, in a car could be in a wreck. We could have, you know, my mom was in good health. She was healthy. I mean, she could water ski. She was raised seven kids. She was, you know, and all of a sudden out of the blue had a cerebral hemorrhage. There was nothing that could have even predicted that. And so I realized that my time, I hope I have a lot of time, but I don't know. And so I wanted to write a book to my kids, telling them things that I thought were important. Now, you know, what's important to me may not be important to another dad. But one of the things I just want to bring up here, you know, Cam, you mentioned this. Thanks for mentioning this. You know, I sometimes will ask people, I'll say, hey, do you know what your great great grandparents did for a living? When I ask this, most people can't tell you. Now, occasionally there's a few that can. But you got to remember, you had 16 great grandparents. So, like, some of them know like one or two of the 16. And then I'll ask them, you know, somebody might say, well, they were a farmer or a rancher or whatever they're. And I'll say, well, did they have a really good, do you know if they had a really awesome plow? Was their plow awesome? Or did they have a really good, you know, horse? And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, here's the bad news. Your great great grandkids are going to care about as much what you drove. If you, I mean, they're not going to care if you had a hot car or not. They're not going to care if you had the biggest house or not. But the kind of parent they are is going to flow down more than you realize. And let me give you just one example. So, for example, I live in the United States of America. The reason I'm here is because I had ancestors hundreds of years ago that decided to take their families on a boat and come to the United States. Now, this is a really obvious one because it's geographical and I can sort that one decision or decisions they made have that affects my education, affects the language I speak, my educational opportunities, it affects my economic opportunities, my religion. Everything is affected by choices that were made hundreds of years ago. Less obvious, but still super real is, were they good parents? Were they checked in? Were they checked out? Were they drunk? Were they, you know, what kind of decisions did they make that was passed down? And so here's the thing, you know, if you and I, Cam, were to start a business, statistics say we wouldn't make it past, most businesses die in the first few years. Even the established ones don't make it past their 18th birthday. Give it a decade or two. What we're doing in the work world usually isn't going to last. But when your daughter comes in and wants to have fun with you, or my kids want to go do something, that's going to go down for centuries. Just like the decisions that my ancestors made are still affecting me today. I mean, right now, presently, their decisions are affecting me today. And so, I guess I wanted to write that book because I thought, you know, I'm going to let my kids know what I think is important. And hopefully it will have an impact on them when I'm gone.
Do you journal?
I do. Yeah, I do.
It's something that I was challenged to do by a guest I interviewed. It was probably over a year ago now, to journal. And I started journaling in my iPad, electronic device. I just journaled. And then there was something about that that shifted. And what it was is I found my grandmother's journal. We were clearing out some of my dad's stuff. He's getting rid of stuff. And I opened it up, and it there was a little note in it. It says, write about today like it's tomorrow's history. And that's what she had written. Her name was Jean Hall, and she had it there. And I say, that's something. So now I've started to journal. I have my like by hand. Yeah, and awesome. It's an incredible process. I didn't like it at first. I'm not going to lie to you. It was really hard. And then to just get into the routine of sitting down and writing what you did that day through the lens of, I'm just sharing this like a story, like an adventure. Also, I found, and I don't know if you found the same, you start to develop a new sense of gratitude for the life that you live when you get to sit down and write about it because you're excited about it. Even the days that are hard, I write about, and I look in at the bottom of that journal and be like, well, that was an experience. that was an experience that I'm going to learn from.
Yeah. That's awesome. And that gratitude and that experience, you know, that I love that too, because in some ways it's okay to share those struggles in your journal. Cause when your kids hit hard times, and they will, mm-hmm. they'll say, you know, dad had some hard times too. And somehow he was able to have an attitude of gratitude about it.
And sometimes they'll read it and say, oh wow, my dad had a temper. You know, that's sometimes, but that's we all do at times. Excellent. I have a question for you. This is one of the only questions I ask every guest. And your dad, man, you got the range of ages in your home. And is your 19-year-old still at home?
No.
Not at home? No. As a dad right now, what's an area of growth that you're excited about or you're diving into right now in this period in your life?
As a father?
As a father, yeah.
Well, it kind of comes down to those same things, you know, that one of the things that I read is that your kids will react to things a lot of times the same way you do. Let me give you an example. So this, when you say this, this is one of the things that came to mind. So let me give you an example. If your kid falls down and skins their knee, and if the parent comes up and says, oh my goodness, you hurt your knee, and coochie coochie coo, and do we need to get you Band-Aid or something? And if you overreact to something like that, it might send a message to your kids that they're fragile, for example. You know what I mean? So it's like, oh, I'm breakable. Then when they scrape their knee and you're not around, they might kind of freak out because dad freaked out or because mom freaked out. You know what I'm saying? And so what I've been trying to do as a dad is realize that how I react to things kind of helps. It almost puts a voice in their head for when you're not there. So for example, which is good and bad news, right? We got to be careful how we do things. I've blown it for sure. But what I'm saying is, if we can say, you know, if they did scrape their knee, and as long as it's, you know, they're not bleeding, broken, all over, you know, if you could just say, you know, that happens and you're going to be just fine. And you can show some compassion, but I'm saying you can show them that they're going to be okay. And like I said, I've not done this as well, but one of the things that, let me tell you one more example. That same daughter that I had, she actually was supposed to give a presentation in our local congregation. They were asked to ask, and she, you know, there's probably hundreds of people in this, and I wanted her to be confident. So I just said, you know, you're going to be fine. You can do this. And she got up there and was able to talk for, you know, five minutes or so without any problem. And I could have been like, can you do this? You can't publicly speak. And I could have freaked out. Trying now, there's been times where we have blown it for sure, but I've been trying to say, okay, however I react to that, whatever situation it is, my kids are going to have that voice in their head. And so that's where I've been trying to say, okay, how am I going to react to this? Because my kids are going to watch, they're going to really look at that example. So they say there's three things that are important when you're trying to influence people, and it's example, example, example. And that's why I'm trying. That's the bad news and the good news.
I like that. That's good. Excellent. I want to thank you for taking time away from your family to spend with us and share your story. And what a story, man. There's times where you're sharing, and I I don't have anything to say. Like, I just listen. I listen to how you share about your mom, your dad, Cheyenne, climbing a mountain with your daughter. Like, those stories are things that you want your kids to know about when you die and what you learn from them. And I wanted to thank you for sharing those with us today.
Thank you, Cam. You've been a great host. Thank you so much for having me.
Excellent. Excellent. If someone wants to connect with you, if they want to find out more information about you, where can they do that?
You know, they could find it. Just, I have a really unique name, so it's really easy to optimize. And I've even got my first name.com. So it's xsayn.com, E-K-S-A-Y-N.com.
Amazing.
The business side of xfactoredge.com, but either one of those would be fine to connect with me.
Amazing.
Thanks for asking.
Xsayn, thank you. It's been a pleasure. I wish you and your family all the best and all the best with the book.
Thank you, Cam. Appreciate you.
Thank you for joining me today on this episode of the Dad's Making a Difference podcast. I hope you found value in today's show. And if it made a positive impact on you, please share it with someone you know, leave a 5-star review, and subscribe so you don't miss out on upcoming episodes. And if you are a father listening to this right now, who is driven to build a life of significance, to truly make a difference in the life of your family, in your business, and in the community around you, go to dmdmastermind.com to learn more about the Dad's Making a Difference Mastermind, a mastermind group for fathers that provides men with the skills, the connections, the accountability, the proven steps, and the brotherhood to truly become a dad making a difference. I'm Cam Hall. Thank you for spending time with me today, and I will see you on the next episode of the DMD Podcast.